Welcome to the Being Known podcast with my friend, Dr. Kurt Thompson.
And my friend, Pepper Sweeney.
We are here to discover and explore what it means to be truly known. Hey, Kurt. Listen. Yeah.
Yes, we are.
So, if okay. You, at some point, probably in the season-end gag reel, you all are going to get to see what happened for the last 5 minutes with Kurt and I uncontrollably laughing, not able to get through the introduction of this podcast for reasons unbeknownst to either of us. we were both so tickled that it was a difficult and beautiful moment.
It was a chore. It was a long on-ramp to get on the interstate.
But you know what? You were saying laughter is right? It's just the greatest thing.
It's the best.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
And the no matter what we come into the conversation with, to have laughter like that and just have this freeing feeling, you know, it's beautiful, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's one of the features that the three of us share so often when we are recording. You know, we have time beforehand that we check in with each other and see how we're doing. And my goodness, I'm aware that no small part of what I'm looking forward to is the laughter.
Yes.
Like, I know something's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's really going to create that space of vulnerability. And gosh, even now, I'm aware that I feel lighter than I felt 20 minutes ago.
100%. And you know, that was a combination. I know we have a podcast to do, but it was a combination of the laughter that we shared, right? But also you just mentioned there's a vulnerability in the laughter, but the vulnerability that we shared too. We come together and we talk about things that aren't always the prettiest things in the world about us. And yet, you know, I think it's a great segue into this episode that we're doing today, which is episode 5. And we are looking at chapter 4 of Dr. Kurt Thompson's newest, latest book, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. And chapter 4 is entitled Glory. And I'm really excited to jump into this chapter today because I think it's a beautiful chapter. I really do. There's just we get to meet Cheney, who takes us on a bit of a journey into what it means to experience glory.
Yeah. And, you know, this comes from this part of this section of Romans 5 where Paul writes, and we boast in the hope of the glory of God. This is verse 2, the second half of that verse. And, you know, I got to tell you, Pep, I mean, when I hear things about, oh, God's glory, the glory of God, it's always a thing where like, oh, I get it in the abstract. Like we're talking about the glory of something, and we're really, it's a word that we use where it helps us try to get our hands around some sense of, you know, whatever the beauty is, the grandeur is, the how amazing, whatever the thing is that we're talking about. I think of, you know, even like Bruce Springsteen and Glory Days, right? The whole notion of how we have this notion of like, it is all about this felt sense of something that's wonderful about a particular person. In this case, God and God's glory. In the scriptures, there's a word that we use called the Shekinah glory, this overwhelmingly magnificent presence of God that was in the temple, the glory of God that was in the tabernacle that was responsible for the death of two of Aaron's sons. Because it's kind of like, as our friends at the Bible Project like to say, when you talk about the glory, you're talking about the sun. If you think about the sun is this beautiful thing. It gives us life and so forth, but it can also kill you.
Right.
Right. It can fry your skin. And if you get too close to it, you can't tolerate it. The sun is just being itself.
Asked Icarus.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like all the time.
Right.
It's such a, that was a bummer. That was a bummer of a day for him.
For sure.
Right. He was not wearing his 100 proof.
Yep. SPF.
When he went.
Right.
SPF. That's right. So it's an odd thing to get my head around. So the whole notion of trying to talk about glory, this feels like, what does glory have to do with suffering? I don't really get that. And what I'd like for us to do first is to explore Cheney's story a little bit. And then we'll come back to this question of how does glory speak to a person who has suffered in the way that she has. She came to me in her mid-late 30s. She was married with kids. And, you know, it's one of these stories that you can't make up in terms of like what people do, mm-hmm. how these humans behave. She was the daughter of parents who both were NGO workers, right? They were working overseas in a developing country. And they sent her to a boarding school in a different part of where they were living that was quite a ways away.
When she was 6 years old, right?
When she was six, right, to go to first grade. Right, to go to first grader, And it was a common thing. And it's a common thing for people to do.
Right.
It happens all over the world. And she was, for the most part, systematically bullied by older girls from the time that she arrived, pretty much until the time that she left. Then to make matters worse, she kind of sought emotional comfort in one of the older boys by the time she was kind of in middle and then high school, whom she thought was going to be protective of her. And in their relationship, she got pregnant.
Yeah.
And then, because her parents were too overwhelmed with their own lives and couldn't do anything about that from a distance, they paid for her to have an abortion.
Right.
In high school.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this to throw her parents under the bus, but this is just what happened. But she's kind of like left to deal with this on her own. And of course, all this is done very quietly, right? I know this, but it's not like anybody else knows what's going on.
Right.
So she is alone with this. She comes back to the States, goes to college, and she has this encounter with Jesus, and her life is transformed. But she has never really talked about any of these things. And she starts to have other children, and not uncommonly, old unfinished business from her family starts to reemerge. Her parents have moved back to the States by then. And old stuff, old unfinished business from all that trauma starts to kind of come into the room for her. And she's depressed and anxious, and she's upset and so forth. And so she comes to see me. And she eventually, we do a lot of work. And around these issues of shame about the abortion, but also her conflict about her parents. What are you supposed to do with these people? You both are enraged, and you're also aware that they did the best that they could do, and what do they do? She eventually joined one of our confessional communities that we've talked about here. And it was in that space that she eventually began to do the kind of work that was so crucial. And this is where the notion of glory comes in this sense that for Cheney, as we've said here before, when we were talking about confessional communities and we did our series on that, it's one thing for her to come to see a therapist, come to see me, and see me week after week after week, and you develop a certain sense of trust with one person. It's another thing altogether to step into a room of strangers.
Right.
And how are you going to tell your story to people that you don't know? They're not therapists. They're all that whole notion.
Well, yeah.
How much effort.
Right. And the story that you're going to tell, you're still dealing with some shame. And, you know, so you're going to do the hardest thing to, you know, you're going to expose the things that you don't, that you want to cut off, that the natural instinct is to just not either ignore them or push them down or not, certainly not talk about them in a group of strangers.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like I'm suddenly having this flashback to the moment we were standing on it's not no longer called the Sears Tower, but in Chicago, where like on the 110th floor or whatever it is, now they have these boxes, that these huge acrylic boxes that you can step into that extend out from the observation deck, and you can walk out into the box, and it's a clear acrylic floor, and you see 1,100 feet.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, thank you. I'll just say that, right? You know,
and dude, I mean, I may have said it here, I had a hard time stepping into that box because your brain is saying this is a really bad idea.
Yeah,
right. While my son had already gone into the box was just kind of like jumping, like looking at me and like jumping up and down in the box. And I had one woman in front of me who she couldn't even go. She couldn't step into the box.
Listen, I don't like the way I'm feeling right now, you telling the story. So, and I'm not on the high floor.
Right.
I'm in my basement.
Right. Right. Well, this is not unlike what we were asking Chaney to do.
Yeah.
We're asking her to step into this box. And this brings us back to this question of glory. And what does that have anything to do with what's happening for her in that moment? And there is this element of glory that the scriptures talk about, the glory of God, that really are focused on when we get to the Gospel of John. And John talks an awful lot about this. The pastor and missionary and author, Leslie Newbegin, in his commentary on the Gospel of John, really explores this, in which he notes that in the very first chapter, chapter 1, verse 14, and then also chapter 17, verse 1, that the writers talk about the glory of God as a function of the love between the Father and the Son, and the love of God for us. That God's glory is really all about his utter delight in us. There is nothing more glorifying for God than for us to be receptive to his love for us. Now, I have a hard time getting my head around this. But then C.S. Lewis comes along in his sermon, The Weight of Glory, and he gives us this sermon, this illustration. He talks about, you know, if for any of us who are dog owners out there, you come home, and maybe for most of us, hopefully, you have a dog.
Oh my gosh.
What happens when you come home?
You know, it's so funny. Even just this morning, I went to the gym and I came back. I'm home. I'm either on the road or I'm home, basically. And so she's pretty attached to me. And she's a small dog, but she can jump so high. When I come home, she goes completely nuts. And then I have to say, go to the couch. And so she'll run through the kitchen, into the living room, jump up on the couch and just like, it's everything she can do to just be like still up there waiting for me to come over and pet her. And she's crying and whimpering.
Yeah.
And right now,
right,
she's under my desk. I have a little bed set up for her underneath there because she cannot not be next to me right now because she's afraid I'm going to leave again.
Right. And so when you pay attention to her, what does she do?
Oh, she is just so excited and she's, you know, wagging her tail and so happy to see me. And,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Lewis points out in his sermon, he says, there is nothing more pleasing to the dog than to be receptive of the pleasure of the dog's master, the dog's owner.
Yeah.
Like it's the master coming to the dog and attuning to the dog that just gives the dog this utter delight. And this sense of glory that God's showering us, that we are the object of his pleasure and his delight, this is what it means for us to share in his glory. It's not just about his magnificence, about his beauty, about his power, about his, you know, otherness. All those things are true that contribute, but nothing more so contributes to the notion of his glory than of his love for us.
So if you walked into my kitchen right now, one of the things that you might notice is on my refrigerator, I have some save the date cards up there. I have some wonderful gatherings and weddings coming up in the summer, all the way out into the fall, and I'm really excited about these things. And just having these save the dates and knowing that I have these great things to look forward to makes my present life even better, just having those things coming up. So I have a gift for you, a save the date. The Center for Being Known is thrilled to announce the Connections Conference 2024 is coming to you October the 24th and the 25th. Now, this is going to be a great opportunity for you to do things like connect with your confessional communities if you're in one. If you're not in one, it'll be a great opportunity for you to join one, as we will be connecting some people there in some confessional communities. You'll also have the opportunity to hear some great speakers, including Sandra McCracken, Dr. Dan Allender, David Bailey, and Jessica Honegger. Of course, Dr. Kurt Thompson will be there. I will be there emceeing. And additionally, we will have a live Being Known podcast recording that is included in this event. You know, listen, we have listened to you. We know that you want some time to breathe at this event. You don't just want to be spoken to the entire time. You want to be interactive and connecting with each other, and we want to make that happen for you. So mark your calendars for October 24th and 25th and join us for an unforgettable experience of learning, growth, and connection at the Connections Conference 2024, themed From Imagination to Incarnation. There's going to be plenty of time for you to meet one another and connect with new friends. Stay tuned for more details and registration information coming soon. But until then, save the date.
The hard part is that there are so many parts of me that are so broken, so many parts of me that have enough shame in them, that it's hard for me even to allow myself to imagine that that's the case.
Yeah, you say in the book that God's glory is crowded to the edges of our mind, because you're not accepting enough, you're not doing enough, you're not, you know, all these things are pushing the glory of God out to
right.
the edges, yeah.
Right, yeah. Like, I feel like I have to work. Like, it'd be like if your dog, you come home and your dog is like pensively just wanting to make sure that it's doing, like, look, I haven't peed in the house.
Right.
Look, I've eaten all my food today. Is it okay? No, that your dog.
Right.
Dude.
Right.
Yeah. I want to be your dog.
Right.
Right. I mean, this sense, who wouldn't want to be that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so this notion, I'm being taken aback. Wait, go to the couch. The dogs are running the couch, jumping up and quivering, waiting. Okay. And just imagining the dog looking at you. Looking at you, looking at the dog. And this is what it means for us to anticipate and look for God's gaze for us. For Cheney, for any of us, to look at someone with the anticipation that we are going to be receiving that kind of delight is an act of great vulnerability.
So I want to stress this a little bit because you write in the book that Cheney, you know, she's in the group. It's okay if I talk, go here, right?
Yeah, go.
So she's
go.
In the group and she has just told her story, and she's told her story as well as she can at that point, and with not just all the beautiful things, but the ugly things as well. And she's looking at the floor.
Yeah.
And I feel this, right? As I'm reading the book, I'm like, yeah. So she just finishes, and she's in this room with these people, and she's looking at the floor, and it's all she can do to lift her head and gaze in the eyes of the people in the room that just heard her story, and the glory that she receives in that moment that makes her feel like people saying, "We're so glad to see you." We've been waiting for you. You're just the person that we've been looking for. And as she goes from person to person, the shame loses its power, right?
Dude.
It completely loses its power as she, because you can't necessarily trust it with just this one person here. That feels good, but I don't trust it yet. So she goes to the next one and the next one and all the way around the room. Until she's just bathed in this glory. And in that moment, I'm not saying it's not going to come back, but in that moment, shame lost its power.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. This notion that you're pointing out, that the glory touches her at the very point of her deepest shame.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, I'm so prone to hiding my shame and then wondering why I'm having a hard time understanding glory.
Yeah.
And it's only until the parts of me that I hate the most are in the room.
This is so important. Yeah. Yeah. Say more about that.
Yeah. No, you go. You get like,
I mean, it's this whole idea of the ugliest, you know, most disgusting parts of ourselves that can bring up beauty. That is just, you know, it's just, it defies logic in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the garden is there, but it's not going to come unless you really expose it to the fertilizer. Right?
Right. Right.
Exactly. It's a delicate way of putting that, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And just this idea of allowing yourself to be so vulnerable with other people about those parts of your life, and that being the place where you experience God's beauty and forgiveness and love the most.
Mm.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, I've experienced that. You and I have had conversations with one another, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Where we're sharing things that, you know, you think, I don't know what I'm going to get back here, but I'm going to jump off this cliff because I want to experience the beauty on the other side. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We here. Talk an awful lot about this notion that we can hear all kinds of things from the pulpit or from the Bible, and it doesn't always have some felt sense of embodiment. Like, how do we, like, well, like, okay. And so one example, yeah, you want to say something?
I just thinking about, you know, the story that we just told about,
yeah,
to say I'm going to experience God's glory today, you know, you might think that means I'm going to go out in nature and I'm going to experience, you know, but... Mm-hmm. To truly experience this kind of glory requires us to experience it from one another.
Right. Right.
God totally. Through us to one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would say that this was what her experience was in that moment. And then you have scriptural texts, for instance, from Colossians 3, where we read, "For you have died and your life is hidden in Christ with God." And you're like, oh, that's beautiful. I have no idea what that means. Well, and let alone whatever it means, what practicality does it serve? And then what we sense is that in this body of Jesus, Chaney's story, her life has now been received. It's being hidden. They're holding it. They are with her in all these places. She's hidden with them. Now, of course, there's no question that this takes practice, which we'll get to in a moment. But in that moment, she has the embodied sense that she is in Jesus, in this body, and Jesus is in God, and all is well.
And you say in the book that in that moment, God sent the message to her through everyone's gaze.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it is this very physical engagement. This is not some kind of a, whatever we call this, spiritual thing or whatever, some imagined thing. Like, it is a real thing that's happening in real time and space.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And one of the things that then follows is giving Chaney the practice of remembering. She has to remember this, as we all do. And you know, we are all, I'm prone to thinking, oh, I'll have some kind of enlightenment experience. And then once I have the enlightenment, I don't need any more work on that thing. That thing has happened. Or some, I get some new insight, and the insight will be immediately something that I will perfectly apply without recognizing that I'm going to have to practice this. And so we gave her this instruction. The first thing that we did was that we had her go around the room again. Hmm. And then we had her name names. And we also asked her to describe what was it that she was seeing coming from Ethan's face, coming from Sarah's face, coming from John's gaze. Now, to be sure, we also warned her about a thing that we commonly talk about being a vulnerability hangover.
Right.
You talk about these things, and then the next day you're like, what have I done? These people are going to be like telling all their friends, you know, it'll be on the front page of the Post.
Right.
I'm so in trouble. We warned her about this, and she reported the next week, yes, I did have a little bit of that, but the fact that you had told me this, like, let me know that, oh yeah, these things happen. And we came back, but we said to her every day, between now and next week, we want you to take some time and practice remembering what happened here in the room. And this is what we are all charged with doing. We're all charged with remembering. When we read in Deuteronomy chapter 8, four times God says through Moses, remember, remember, remember. We're not just called to remember facts or abstractions. We are called to bring to mind real embodied experiences in which we have been gazed upon with loving kindness. And out of that loving kindness with which we are gazed upon, we then have what we need to do the same with those around us. But what is most striking is when that gaze comes in the very moment and space of exposure of the parts of us that we hate the most. Mm. That's what becomes transforming. Mm. In many respects, what we're doing is working toward the development of like this earned secure attachment that we talk about in the very presence of our suffering. And we're beginning just now then to, we're just getting to this notion. Remember, we've said this is a book about suffering and the formation of hope. But in the Christian message, in the Christian story, we don't first just dive into talking about suffering. There is an on-ramp to this. It is about secure attachment of faith. It is about being at peace with God, all these different parts of us that we have to name. It is about God's glory in which we, his grace in which we stand, that we have to pay attention to our body. And it is about his gaze, the gaze of loving kindness, that is one aspect of all the glory that the entire scriptures talk about. All of this is not unlike what happens to a newborn, an infant, and a toddler when they're coming into the world and living in a home in which they are being dearly received. We're so glad that you're here. And now let's help you grow into the person that God has longed for you to grow. It is in the middle of our suffering, then, that we bring all of these things as we imagine what it means for suffering to give us the opportunity to be transformed into the people that we never would have imagined that it could do.
Hmm. Yeah. I think we have an assignment for everyone for this week, and that is this. Consider when it was that you last had an experience of others being utterly joyful at being in your presence. Take some time to recall what you felt in your body and what you recalled thinking about, what that meant at the time. And if you have not, we want you to plan to, once each day in the coming week, to meditate on that experience for the purpose of embedding into your memory what it's like to sense God's glory.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these are all important things. You know, I'm often just so aware of the places where I suffer. And when we're sitting with patients and we're sitting with our own kids, right, when they're suffering, the suffering is often is so front and center that it's easy for me to lose track of these other things that we've been talking about. They're the things that prepare us to really dive head on into the main topic, which we'll be getting at in our next episode. But this has been really great to talk about this stuff together.
This has been a great day. We started this conversation talking about laughter and talking about how the first 5 minutes of this show that you probably won't hear on this episode will wind up in a gag reel somewhere. And I just want you folks to know that that somewhere is on our YouTube channel, where you can see not only all the episodes that we've done over the years, but also you can see these gag reels. And that is at Being Known Pod on YouTube. And speaking of YouTube, if you're watching us right now on YouTube, I apologize for that. But you can please stick around, because producer Amy is going to be joining us here in just a couple of seconds, and we're going to have a post-show conversation. Hey, Kurt, I love you, buddy.
Love you, man. Right.
All right.
This podcast is produced by Kurt Thompson, Pepper Sweeney, and myself, Amy Chella. Audio production and editing is by Keaton Simon. Video production and editing is by Mark Gould. Speaking of videos, each week we post the video version of every episode to our YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube by going to youtube.com or your app and searching Being Known Podcast. If you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on social media at Being Known Pod. If you like this podcast, tell a friend. tell all of your friends. And please like, rate, and review. Be well. Be known.